Welcome to Keep the Hotel Empty. Today we've kept the hotel empty for Lisa and Josh from the Lisa Silvermore Band. Welcome, guys.
Thanks.
Oh, we're so glad to have you. I know it's been a little bit of a trick getting you in here, but now the stars have aligned and here you are.
Yeah.
So I know that you, did you just release a single or it's still coming out?
No, we released it November 29th.
That's what I thought.
Friday after Thanksgiving.
So I know you recently had some new music out. I know you've been playing a bunch of shows. I know that there's a big horizon in front of you. But what I want to do, if we can, is maybe press rewind a little bit with you, Lisa. Talk to me about where music comes into your life and this bug starts to bite you. And then we can lead the way to where Josh comes into the fold and you have your namesake band.
Yeah. I was playing Pots and Pans when I was a kid.
Yeah? You're one of those Pots and Pans
kids? Oh,
yeah.
I dragged them all out into the kitchen floor and I was like, let's go. And I would like tell my like brothers and to pay attention to me and watch me drum on pans. I am so not a drummer at all. Like, I'm sure it was so dreadful for them to listen to, but they were such good brothers and they definitely took the time. But in all seriousness, I started really getting into music, I think, my junior year of high school. So I like started on bass in freshman year of high school, and I was playing bass in a couple of bands. And then when things kind of shifted, the girl who was the singer of the band left. And they all looked at me and they were like, well, you kind of write all the lyrics, so maybe you should sing too. And I was absolutely terrified. I was very shy. I had really long hair and I hid behind it and had no intention of being a lead singer. So I was like, no, I'm good. And eventually, I think they just kind of kept pushing me and nudging me to that. And yeah, I started playing guitar and singing with a couple of really close friends in high school. And that evolved. Over time, I've been in and out of different bands, different genres, folk, punk, ska.
Were you all self-taught initially?
Oh, yeah. I didn't know what I was doing. I just picked up the guitar and I kind of was treating it like bass, where I was just playing tabs at first and just like learning chords and very simple, nothing crazy and complicated. And then I just kind of, I don't know, went by ear. And that's why some of my songs don't really make a lot of sense, I think, is because I don't even know some of the chords I'm playing. And that's like why Josh is so great, because I'll literally look at him like, I don't know, that just sounded cool. And he's like, yeah, it's this chord. And I'm like,
so you have no theory training of any kind?
Not until a year ago. And we start, he teaches guitar.
Oh, cool.
And so that's actually how we met when I was in high school. We met when I was 17. And Josh was teaching at this place called Allegro, which he's still teaching at.
Oh, cool.
And I was going there for voice lessons. And I was like, huh, I should probably learn how to play guitar. And here I am, I was 31 when I started doing the lessons.
Right, yeah.
Eventually.
So when you first start playing guitar and singing, what were your big inspirations? Did you have like someone you were using as like a guide, I want to try to be like this, or were you just totally wild blue yonder? Because I know when people start, you know, it can usually be one of those two things. I feel like I can play X songs like this and kind of make it my own, or I'm just throwing spaghetti at the wall.
I think it was a mixture of both. I was very inspired by Joan Jett and wanted to be just like her growing up. I wanted to be this badass rock star who, you know, flicked off cameras.
Yeah.
But then I also had this other part of me that didn't want to play exactly like her, that kind of wanted to explore my own thing. So yeah, I think I just, I don't know, I took Joan Jett's attitude and then just sort of went my own way. I was thankful for her opening up this world for me, I guess.
Right, right.
Yeah.
So what were some of those first gigs or songs or things like where you were crawling out of the bass player's shell and now you're singing and playing guitar? Did it feel awkward or did you to feel like you were on the right path then?
It was real awkward.
Yeah.
I don't think they were very good, but I went out there anyways and I performed and my fingers buzzed because I didn't know how to do bar chords and my wrist hurt. I was like, what am I doing? This is so painful. I want to go back to bass. And I then became a very big fan of the capo because the capo it helps me when I don't have to do my bar chords and when I don't feel like doing bar chords. I really was kind of going at it very basic, and my chords were basic, but I messed around with, anyone knows me, with tempo changes, pattern changes. I wanted to make it different and sound different. I didn't want it to sound just like any other folk artist or some kind of singer-songwriter. And not that those have bad negative tones to them. Like, I kind of wanted to make my own version of those. So right. when I came out, I think people expected me to sound like some folk singer they had heard before because I had my acoustic guitar, but then I am kind of playing it crazy and it doesn't make much sense.
Is that how you started, just solo?
Mm-hmm. I was in an acoustic duo with a friend of mine from high school, and her and I were kind of playing music together. And then once I graduated high school, I ended up going solo, bands. It kind of was like this cycle of me trying to figure out what my voice was. And it took time.
What were some of the things that helped you find your voice then?
I think being in different bands and exploring the different genres and thinking, oh, I just want to be this or I just want to be that. And then figuring out I didn't like having to fit into one genre and having to write exactly like that and be expected to sound like something. I think that was really hard for me because then I felt myself in this box like, oh, I got to write a song just like that last one and just right. like this one. And I really like being able to explore. And I think that's what's was so fun about being solo was it gave me the freedom to kind of create whatever it was that I wanted. I right. could write a jazzy song. I could write a bluesy song. I could write a punk song. Like I was able to kind of dabble wherever I wanted. And then I think in time that allowed me to kind of find my voice of just the rock band that I'm in now, where acoustic was like my foundation and it allowed me to be a solid rhythm guitarist and I learned my bass. And then from there, when I wanted to add electric, it was sort of this like beautiful switch that started to happen. It was a little awkward still because, you know, you can't play electric like you do acoustic.
Right.
And you find your own little weird, you're like, oh, I didn't realize I strum like this. And, you know, Josh nods his head because that's a conversation.
It gets a lot louder.
Yeah, that's a conversation we definitely had a lot. And you don't realize that. You're like, oh, my picking needs to change or this needs to change or I don't have to pick at all. And like, I just strum and Josh picks up. And space became such my, I think space now is like my favorite thing that I get to add to the band that you don't get to do when you're solo.
That's what I was going to say. Solo, you can't. You're leaving yourself hang out to dry or somehow trying to sell silence.
Yeah. So I think that's something that's been fun to explore with the band.
So how long did you do the singer-songwriter thing?
Like a good 3 or 4 years of, maybe 3 years, I think. My young 20s. Like from 20 to 23.
And that was all in Florida?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, I'm born and raised in Sarasota. So I
one of only five, I think.
Yeah, we're unicorns.
Yeah, that's true.
And so I think because of that, I got to kind of root down cool little Sarasota music scene and watch it grow and see its waves, because there's definite waves.
Of course.
Yeah. But I got to have my foot in the growler scene at a very young age. So because of that, I owe so much to growlers. That really was a place where I got to explore my voice as well and be creative and watch others be creative and get inspired from other local musicians like Ernie, who, right. you know, I've been watching perform since I was a teenager. So, right. you know, it's these staples that were in the scene, like Shannon. Like, all these people that were in the scene, I got to watch, too. And they inspired me so much. Josh. Josh was in Physical Plant. I never thought Josh was going to be in my band. I was like, dude, this guy's way too cool. I was like, are you kidding me? Like, I would watch Physical Plant and be like, damn. I want to be, like, hanging out with those guys. And now they're my best friends. If Love I could it. Go back in time and tell Lisa, she'd be like, what?
No way, you're lying.
Yeah, exactly. You'd be like, oh, he's your bass player?
So talk to me a little bit about some of the advantages you think you might have had or maybe disadvantages you might have had by learning and finding your voice in a live setting versus now where it seems to be a little bit more common for people to be, I hate to use this word and I don't want to use it in a derogatory way, but bedroom artists until they can get themselves out and be like, well, I've already played this 10,000 times for myself at home and recorded it. I already know.
Yeah.
There's two very different ways to learn the ropes.
Yeah.
What are some of the advantages or disadvantages you think you might have had being in it in real time with people instead of bedroom Lisa?
Yeah. I don't think there's like a wrong or right way.
No.
It's just like it's usually just what happens, right? You end up on some crazy path. And I think something, I don't know, my personality is weird. I think I enjoy being uncomfortable.
That's a good thing.
Like, I put myself in very uncomfortable situations, and in my head, I'm like, what am I doing? But in those moments, I grow.
Can you remember when that started for you?
When I put myself in uncomfortable situations?
Yeah, when you found out, when it dawns on you that you're putting yourself in uncomfortable positions, but you're somehow comfortable with it.
Yeah, I think the first open mic I ever played. Yeah. I had a high school boyfriend who was like, hey, you should go play this open mic at a place called The Box Social, which is now the Pie on Main. And I was like, oh no, I've been there. Like, that place is cool. That's like where all the cool like young artists go. And he was like, yeah, that's like where you should go. And I was terrified. And I went and played the open mic. I think I had my eyes closed the entire time and my fingers were buzzing. I was like, oh my gosh, I don't know what I'm doing. And yet I kind of loved it. You know, I don't think I was really good at the time. And when I got off stage, I kind of wanted to vomit, but I also kind of enjoyed that feeling. I don't know. I'm weird.
Yeah. Like, well, that's kind
of like a weird high, you know?
Yeah, yeah. And that's why I ask you to describe that, because I think that's a really powerful thing. And a lot of people will leave themselves stuck on the side where they don't push themselves to the point where feel like you're throwing up. But when you feel like you might throw up, that's actually kind of good.
Right, right. Yeah, you're like, I kind of want to vomit, but I also kind of want to tell everyone that I love them. But I also want to tell them, please don't look at me. But I also want them to come talk to me. I don't know where I'm at.
So when you get over that, or I shouldn't say you get over that, I should say when you identify that you can put yourself in uncomfortable situations and feel comfortable, what's the next steps of that look like? Was it just, now I'm going to put myself on stage as much as I can? Or was your idea really, I'm just going to do this till I can put a band together? What were some of the pieces that you wanted to start to put together after that?
Yeah, I think I at first really wanted to be in a band. And I kept, like I said, I was trying all these different genres, and I was in a punk band, and then I was in like a, I don't know, like a skater pop punk band. Like, I was just kind of all over the place. And I think that was great, and it allowed me to explore. And then when I was solo, I just kind of owned it for a while. And I really wanted the stage to feel comfortable. Mm. And then I made the stage my home. Like, I felt more at home on stage than when I was off stage, which that had its own things I had to face, too, of just being like maybe a little socially awkward and like, oh, what is it like when I'm off stage and I need to talk to people? And we've talked about this a lot. Like, you know, when you come off stage and people want to tell you how great your performance is, and you're just sort of like, oh, okay. You know, because you don't know how to take a compliment yet, you know? And so that's something that I think I still struggle with, but I try to get better at. And so then that formed. And eventually I had all these songs that I'd been playing for quite some time. And people would come up to me and be like, hey, is this recorded anywhere? And then I got an EP. It was all acoustic, all solo. And then hearing those solo songs, I was kind of like, this would sound really cool with a full band.
Was that the first time you had done recording?
Yeah, that was the first time I had done recording. And I was really honored that someone who's a really talented violin player, his name was Luke, he recorded my first EP, I think in like his, he lived with his family, and it was like in his parents' family room, and I was like so nervous, I was like, I don't even know these people, and I'm about to play these songs, and I was like, I hope they don't think I suck. And when I got out, they were like, your songs were great, and I'm like, I don't even care if you lied, thank you so much.
Well, that's another one of those times where you did something uncomfortable and became comfortable.
I was so uncomfortable, and he was so nice, and he even added violin to like two songs, and that inspired me for having Mario, who played violin on my album. So like, it was like all these beautiful things that like inspired me. And after hearing that EP, I was like, I want to get a band together. And I slowly started to pull people to make the band.
And how was that? Was that a process where you thought, and I oftentimes ask band members this, and you can maybe shed some light on this too, Josh. Do you think you were more nervous inviting people into what you were doing? Or do you think you were more nervous showing up to be part of someone's thing?
Do you want to take that?
Thank you for sticking with us. We hope you're enjoying the episode. We'd like to take this time to talk to our sponsor for this week, Tony Barrett from Barrett Realty.
Thank you, brother. I really appreciate you having us on the show. Barrett Realty has been in business for 20 years, and we are a boutique real estate company. And I look forward to servicing our community with people that want to buy and sell property. I think it's very important that we're out there advocating for personal property rights. And we want to be the people that you select when it comes to buying and selling homes. So please, if you're interested in buying or selling homes in Manatee, Sarasota, or surrounding counties, reach out to us at Barrett Realty at 941-745-9999 or brmovesyou.com.
Again, we'd like to send a big thanks out to Tony Barrett, Barrett Realty, for sponsoring this episode and being an awesome part of this community. Please enjoy the rest.
I mean, I was scared as hell putting a band together.
That's what yeah. A lot of people say.
I was like, I don't know. These people could tell me that this sucks, and then I just have to own that. Like, oh, okay, never mind.
In that case,
yeah. I'll just go back to what I was doing. Yeah. It's fine. Yeah. And how Josh came into the band is my favorite story, but we'll get to that in a moment. Because I was pulling the band together sort of like the Avengers, I felt like. Because Toby Norton was my like really good close friend. We hung out all the time. We jammed all the time together. And I was like, hey, do you just want to like be on my album? And he was like, oh, yeah, that makes sense. We have been jamming for a while. And I was like, cool. So then scored one. And then I was like, okay, got to figure out a drummer. And then Doug Rogel, he worked at Whole Foods at the time. I would always run into him at Whole Foods. And we would just end up chit-chatting at the cash register line, like, oh, hey, it's like, I was going live. Oh, yeah, playing shows. And he's a touring drummer. Like, he would.
Yeah, shout out Doug. Doug is one of my favorite drummers.
Dude. Doug is a monster.
Yeah, I love Doug.
Doug. Anyone who knows Doug and has worked with Doug would probably be jumping and clapping right now because they know how amazing he is to work with.
Hell yes.
And really helped pulling this album together, too. And it was one of those moments where I was in line at the cash register at Whole Foods, and I looked him in the eyes, and I was like, do you want to be in my band? I'm putting this band together to make my album. And he could have said no, and he just sort of looked at me and was like, huh, yeah, that actually sounds great. I do have some time. And I was like, wow, Doug has time. It literally was the stars aligning because Doug never has time.
Yeah, I mean, he's a busy drummer, always has been.
Because he's great.
Yeah, yeah.
And so then my friend Angelica, who really put the fire underneath me, she's kind of how this all started. She plays bass, she plays guitar, she sings, she plays piano. She's a force to be reckoned with and is still singing and playing.
Nice.
And I had backup for before this. I put out a Facebook status that said, like, oh, woe is me. I wish I had a band to, like, record. And then she went, well, then do it. And I was like, oh, okay. And she was like, I will be your bass player. We will get this going. So she was, like, this ringleader.
Awesome.
We started rehearsing together in Doug's warehouse. We had date match down. We were going to record with Matthew Frost, who is amazing, and he has a home studio. So I was like, oh, my God, we're all ready. Our dates are set and confirmed. Yeah, like, 3 weeks before the studio date, Angelica comes into the practice and she's like, hey, I can't record with you. And we were like, what? And she's like, yeah, I'm pregnant. And we were all like, oh, and she has a husband. So like, this was all like, you know, she's like, I've been planning this and I'm so sorry. The timing sucks for you, but like timing's great for me. So I'm going to go start my family. And I was like, oh my God, I don't know what to do. We all like were scrambling, trying to figure out who could play bass. And then, of course, Growlers comes into hand, and I walk into Growlers Pub, and I sit down next to Josh, and we have a drink, and I'm like, I don't know what to do with this situation. And then I'm like, wait a tick, and I look at Josh, and I'm like, hey, you play bass? And he's like, I do. And I'm like, do you want to play bass in my band? We're recording an album in literally 3 weeks.
But at that point, it was more like two.
It was like, yeah, I think it was two.
I think we had 3 sessions before we went in the studio. And we were doing it at Doug's warehouse, right? And so I came into that process, and of course there's this dynamic that's already formed, right?
Right.
A lead guitar player, a drummer, and then Lisa's writing the tunes. And so I just kind of walked in, and my whole thing was, I'm just going to try to not be noticeable, right? Like, it's typically a good idea for a bass player.
I was going to say, that's a bass player tactic.
Right?
I've done that one.
But it's like, I'm just going to walk into these tunes. I'm going to not stick my neck out on stuff. I'm going to support them. I'm just going to figure out what's going on. And we had a few of those sessions, and it was so much fun. You know, and a big part of what made it fun was that you and Doug had such different working styles, right? Where, you know, we were coming in, Lisa's like, and this part's like, da-da-da, and this part's like, da-da-da-da. And Doug's like, okay, but hold on a second, because what's happening is we have a measure of six. And then, so like, you know, info coming in all these directions.
In different languages.
Yeah, in different languages. But it was a lot of fun. And of course, I knew Toby well from the scene too. And he's such a lyrical, such a melodic guitar player that they really had everything figured out already. I just had to come in and, you know, put the flooring in on the whole thing. And
nice. So
we did like three sessions or something, and then we went to Matt Frost's place and recorded the album.
So give me, this is a good chance to mission drift a little bit. Give me a little bit of about your background, how you were able to come in, learn these parts so quick, be confident that you can come in and record. Kind of give me the flyover of your musical journey to that point.
Josh is a wizard.
Not really, but...
But you play one on TV?
I could, right? Yeah. Let me grow my beard back.
And, yeah.
You know, I'll get there. You know, I started playing music when I was a kid. Trombone was my first instrument.
Nice.
And then guitar. And I started playing guitar in a classic rock cover band when I was like 13.
Nice.
And I started gigging. And so by the time I was 14, I had about 4 hours of material. Go out, play it, and then I was like competing with the biker bands and stuff like that, you know, getting gigs. And
right.
I did it all through high school, and so I got pretty good at learning tunes. I didn't start playing bass seriously until college.
Were you learning by ear, or did you have some theory?
I have some theory, right? You know, coming up, playing trombone, learning to read and all that. And then I did theory in high school, did chorus, did band, you know, all that stuff. So my reading was pretty sharp, and, you know, I've had theory was really for me what made guitar exciting and possible, because the guitar's like a very confusing instrument in a lot of ways, right? So I was always looking for ways to decode it. And so that's what really got me excited about guitar was theory, essentially.
Nice.
So I had started playing bass a couple of years beforehand. My buddy Matt Decker had a band called Buffalo Wizards, and he had a stretch where his bass player couldn't make it, and he called me, and he's like, Josh, come play bass. I was like, Matt, I don't really play bass. He's like, sure you do.
Yeah.
This is when the gig is. You got a bass amp, right? I'm like, yeah, you're right.
That means you play bass.
And, like, I mean, I think most musicians know how it is. If you can play the bass competently, you show up on time, and you have your own gear, that's it. You're a bass player. Like, the phone just keeps ringing, right? So that's kind of how it got started for me. And yeah, coming to Lisa's band, it's like everything was pretty fully formed already. So you had demos, right? Toby had figured out a lot of stuff, right? The changes were all pretty organized. So I didn't have to do a ton of independent work to get that stuff going. I just came in and played. And then, you know, on those sessions, I was just really careful because I knew if one person was going to mess up, it would probably be me, right, on the takes, because the tunes were freshest for me. So I just sat there and I just, like, you know, looked at Doug for moral support the whole time. It's really effective. It's gotten me through a lot.
Yeah. Yeah.
So did you have any kind of, what were your feelings like from a I'm going to go be creative with other people standpoint? Because this is kind of the operative bit of that question where I like to try to shed some light on what the feelings are like when creative entities have to come together, when you know you can do your thing, but you don't quite know how we're going to jive yet. And like I said, are you more nervous to now take on another bass player 3 weeks before you got to record? Or I shouldn't say more nervous, but what are the feelings that you're feeling at that point? And what are the feelings that you're feeling at that point when you're coming together and trying to make it happen and everybody's just kind of still strangers?
Right.
I was stoked to have Josh. I was like, yeah.
So no part of you was just like, oh man, what happens if this guy gets pregnant?
Are you kidding me? Then yeah. I have a good story. Yeah. that's an even better story. Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. I think when I knew that Josh was hopping on, I knew that he would be great. Cause I just had seen him in the scene and I'd seen him in Buffalo Wizards and I was like, oh, yeah, if he's going to jump on this, like.
And I mean, yeah, you had Doug and Toby already.
Yeah.
So it's like you already had heavy hitters. And I mean, that for me was part of the selling point of jumping on was like, I knew I would get to go in and play with this group, and you had already put a good group together as well.
And as a bass player, there's nothing more tantalizing than an awesome drummer to play with.
Yeah, literally.
It's the best,
That's
right?
the bait. Yeah. That's the bait.
It's the most fun you can have is playing with a great drummer, right? So, you know, I was excited about it because in most of the projects I've worked in, there's some level of collaboration. Like, even my band that I still play with now, Physical Plant, right? It's like, that was always a collaborative project, so multiple songwriters in that group. I had gone in and played bass, you know, for a couple other people. So I was just excited to go in and break down some tunes.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, it's nice when excitement can override anything else.
Yeah. Right.
So tell me about what those recording sessions were like. Where are you thinking you're at with the band there? Where are we at in the band life when those recordings are starting to take place? You got Josh in the fold.
Gosh, I think I was 23, 24. And I felt like, man, I'm doing it. Like, this is the coolest thing ever. I have, like, the coolest band members. I felt super honored that all of them wanted to play with me and record this album. It was 9 original songs, the 10th one being the one that I had Mario play violin on. So, like, everyone came in and gave it their best and then came back and, you know, Toby had to lay down doubles and we went back and did vocals. So like seeing it in its process was so beautiful. And it, you know what? It took time. It took a long time. The band session actually took, I think, maybe 3-4 days. We went in and we hammered it out. Like we recorded scratch takes in a live room. We all performed together. But the album was kind of special being that I literally, if you see it now, like when you go and you look at the album Doppelganger, the first song is Run Away With Me, which was the first song I had like really written as a solo artist. Mm-hmm. And then it's a chronological order of like my music.
Oh, that's
that
cool.
Time.
That's
so
rare.
So I literally put it in chronological order of every song that I was writing at that time, being that the last song, 9, the Why Are We Running, was the freshest song for all of us, including myself. And I remember us going through that song quite a few times because it was so new. Like, I think I may have written it a month prior to the studio.
And all of those pieces of music, you had written and arranged the compositions already, solely just you.
Yeah, I mean, I wrote all the guitar and vocals, and then I would bring it to the band, and they would write their own parts. And I would kind of, like, you know, give my opinion on what I was like, hey, Doug, this is the kind of like vibe I'm looking for.
But the structures and everything you had done.
Yes.
Is that still the way you do it now?
Pretty much. Josh helps me write a lot of the songs now too. Especially like more of the like heavier rock tunes, just because I'm all about breaks and like allowing to have some space for us now that we are just a 3-piece. So Josh and I will come together and write some more structures and, you know, he might help flesh out some things that...
Just mostly, like, technical stuff. Like, where Flares. Should we count to 4 instead of, you know, putting in a break that just lasts a certain amount of time.
Right? Well, and flares. You put, like, hey, let's try this chord.
I, like, throw in spicy stuff.
We want 3/4 of a measure
that.
Rest.
Right, you know.
I want it.
Try not to do that.
Yeah, right, exactly. That's what I'm saying. That's your voice. Yeah. So what are your inspirations for that? Do you have, like, a... I mean, I know you've mentioned folk and the singer-songwriter thing, that kind of speaks for itself, but when you're talking about leaving spaces or some of the odd things that you do that he decodes for you, what do you think is your inspiration for that? Or is this just the innate sound you spit out and you have no clue until he puts the decoder ring to it?
It's weird up there, so it's probably the latter, but I listen to a variety of music, which is why it's so hard to pin down sometimes my inspirations, because I could be at a local show hearing a band. I'm like, ooh, that's cool. And then I like go home and I'll think about that. Or, you know, I listen to a lot of Manchester Orchestra, and they're kind of like a heavy rock band, but then they also kind of have some acoustic guitar, and then they also have like ambient, like they're kind of all over the place too. Wolf Alice is one of my favorite bands too. And she really plays with space and the way she sings and different matters. Like, I don't know. I keep my mind open to the possibility that my songs can change and evolve. And I always like send like a demo to like one of my like closest friends. And I'm like, this is probably going to change a lot. But give me your like preference on this right now. Like, how is the seed looking?
Interesting. Well, that makes me wonder, you know, as you're writing things, and maybe you guys can both shed a little bit of light on this, when you don't have, and I don't ask for your influences so much to try to pigeonhole your sound, but mm-hmm. more like what crept into your head that let this come out. When you think to yourself, I want to be influenced by a lot of different things, whether it's A Beautiful Sky or a rap song or a Manchester Orchestra song, I want to be influenced by a lot of things. Inherently, you're going to have music that, or your art will reflect that to some degree. Have you found it hard to, or harder to not have a specific lane or box that you can sit in? You can say, I'm Lisa Silvermore, I'm like plugged in Bob Dylan. I'm Lisa Silvermore, I'm like Fleetwood Mac, whatever. And instead of having a cookie cutter you can sell yourself in, do you find it harder to let yourself have the creative freedom to explore all of your inspirations?
Like, is it harder to be more open? I think at times, but I think that was how I felt when I was doing a lot of acoustic stuff, because there are expectations the minute you pull out an acoustic guitar.
Mm.
And I felt that a lot. And people would always ask me, like, oh, well, why do you play acoustic? Why do you play acoustic? Why do you play acoustic? So then I kind of like, my rebellious bone was like, oh, well, I'm going to show you that acoustic guitar be whatever I want it to be. And I did, and I kind of enjoyed that. Like, you know, sometimes I'm playing a soft tune, or sometimes I'm ripping my fingernails open because I'm playing so fast and crazy and insane. And I think I enjoyed that, but then there was something I was missing. Like, I was like, I really want to be able to open myself up to whatever and not have people always question why I had acoustic. You know, and so when I picked up electric and started going down that route, I think there was a part of me that I could be more experimental. Mm. And then the pedals came in, and then I was like, ooh, pedals are fun. Why didn't I try this before? And then that's a rabbit hole. So
very much so.
And I think that's how I came to So Close So Far, which was our single that we put out in 2023. That was the year, right? 2023?
Let's say that.
Sold.
What's time? Yeah.
An illusion.
Yeah, it's a concept. So when I came to So Close So Far, I got probably maybe too experimental at first, because I didn't even know what I wanted to do. The pandemic had happened. I was like, I don't even know what it means to be a band. And I was all confused. And I think that song allowed me to really open up. And that opened the store of, like, you can play whatever you'd like to play.
Do you think that when you first heard it back, you felt like it didn't sound like you?
Yes. When I first heard it, I was like, uh-oh, I don't think anyone's going to like this, because they had kind of an image of me already.
See, and that's kind of the operative bit of my question. If you don't, if you play something, or you have a certain type of art that has an expectation tied to it, and you meet that expectation, check, W. But if you don't have any expectation and you show up and do your thing, that leaves people in the limbo where, do I like this?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm wondering how that has been for you. And that sounds like a good couching of it. Have you had any experience like that?
Yeah. I mean, I would say I have. But I think that, like, my own projects tend to work within sort of like a era framework, right? Like, it sounds kind of like this, kind of like this. And, you know, that's one thing I like about, say, like 70s AM radio or something.
Is right.
The pop music, then you had a really, really sort of wide diversity in styles, right?
Right.
You had hard rock, you had funk, you had R&B, you had soul, you had all this stuff. And so I honestly think, in my own experience, it's harder to try and stay in the box. Like, it's harder to try and create something marketable, right?
Ah, yeah, yeah, know? Yeah.
And I was actually talking with a younger artist that I met about this last year, and they were, you know, talking to me backstage at this place about all of these issues they'd had with their Instagram comments. And they were saying, like, oh, you know, I put this out and then all the comments said this. And I put this out and then all the comments said, you need to be more like this. And so that's what I did. I changed. I was more like this. And it just kind of really messed with me. I was like, man, I'm so glad that, first off, I'm too old to have had that experience, right? Like,
right.
When yeah. I came up and was first writing songs, it was just like, do whatever you want. Mm-hmm. No one's going to care or say anything, mm-hmm. right? And you just keep doing it and you keep working at it and growing. And I'm not sure that really I could work in a different way, right?
Right.
Think for me, I have to be able to do whatever it is I want to do at that moment. And, you know, the marketing is what you have to take care of after that, right?
Yeah.
How do you describe it? Because that's how you sell it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly, you know? Exactly.
Totally.
Well, you just touched on something that a lot of songwriters I've talked to or musicians I've talked to have kind of expressed the same sentiment. They want to be able to do whatever they want to do for the obvious reasons.
Yeah.
But then writing something simple or writing something that maybe fits in a nice tidy box seems more difficult.
Yeah.
Do you ever have a time when you're writing your music where you're worried, or I shouldn't say worried, but where it becomes a concern of yours is this interesting? Or is this like the bar is as long as it's interesting to me, it should be interesting to someone?
I think as long as it's authentic and it's like coming from like a real place, people are going to want to listen.
Ah.
That's what I feel.
What do you think are the hallmarks of an authentic song?
That's a really good question. I think when you're listening to something, and for me, I guess because I'm a songwriter and I'm listening to lyrics and I'm listening to how someone's singing, this could be different for someone who's a drummer.
Right, of course.
But like here I am listening to how their lyrics are, like how are they singing their melody? Like, does it feel like it's coming from a real place? Does it feel like this person has no idea what the story is at all and they can't relate to this? And like, that's, I feel like you can feel that. And maybe I'm just deep into my feels and I want to feel what they're singing too.
Amen to that though. That's what we're supposed to be doing, right?
Yeah. So like I do get attracted to that. I feel like whether I'm listening to pop songs, which I mean, I love pop music. There's nothing wrong with listening to pop songs, or I'm listening to a punk band, or I'm listening to a rap artist or whoever it is. If they're being authentic, I think that is what is so easy to sell and so easy because it's just like, boom, it's right there.
And you feel like the things that make for that authenticity, those intangible things, are things you pick up on if your radar, if your antenna's up?
Yeah. Like, you just, I think if, like, for me, it's like, okay, you pick your, like, authentic things and maybe exaggerate it, and that's the things that you market. Like, just push that thing, you know? Like, whatever it is that's, like, you make it, like, a little bit bigger and then go for it and just run with it. You know, like, because it's coming from a real place. You're not being fake.
Right.
If you're being fake, it's going to like, it's going to wear off. You're not going to like it. No one else is going to like it. You'll be gone. Like,
yeah,
you know?
I guess. Have you ever had moments like that where it starts to feel more like a task than your reward?
It did for a hot minute. And that's when I was like, I don't know if I want to do this anymore.
The crisis of faith moments, I call those.
Yeah.
So talk to me a little bit about that.
You mean the existential crisis that every musician, I think, has once or twice?
Sister, that one. That one.
I think it was like right around the pandemic. So like the pandemic just really just like helped with that. It was like, I moved to Nashville and I was like, I'm going to do it. I'm going to do the Nashville thing. And that didn't really work out. For my own dumb reasoning of just like not planning very well.
And it's cold there.
It's okay. I did not know they had winters.
Yeah.
And I'm from Florida.
Yeah.
I'm tangenting off for just a moment. There was so much ice. And like, I was not mentally prepared for that.
No bueno.
I was like, oh, snow. And then the ice happened. And I was like, oh, no, 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 no. Snow is cool. Ice is not.
And then ice happened.
Yeah, ice really ruined it for me. But Nashville is magical in other ways.
Yeah.
But yeah, like I came back from Nashville and I felt like a little defeated. And then I was like, I don't know what I want to do, blah, blah, blah. And I was kind of just like, I felt like a fish out of water. Like I was like flopping a bunch. I was like, I don't know what I want, blah. And then we played a little bit more. But then I was like, oh, I'm not inspired.
So you came back from Nashville and put band back together right away?
Yeah, the band came back together, which I knew that was going to be super fun to do, get everyone back together. And we played a couple of shows. And it wasn't
the
band. It was just like I felt uninspired. Like I was like, nothing's clicking. Like I don't like what I'm writing. I don't feel like it was coming from a real place. I didn't even know what to write about. I don't know. I was just kind of like musically blocked, if you will. Like I just wasn't in the right headspace. And then I was like, maybe I'm done. Maybe this is it. Like, I don't know. Maybe you just do it for a little bit and then you move on. And so I kind of changed my tune for a while, literally, and picked up on other things. I became a yoga instructor full time and I did photography full time. And I went down a different route and I thought, okay, music is behind me. And I didn't play. And when I did play, it was sort of like I would pick up the guitar because someone was like, hey, do you want to play this random gig? And I'm like, I guess. And I wasn't even like really that excited. It was just sort of like a shrug. It was like, all right. And then the pandemic happened and I definitely had an existential crisis of just like, if I'm not a musician, who am I?
Mm.
Because I identified as a musician my entire existence, basically. And then when I didn't think live music was going to come back, or if it did, it was going to be VR. And I'm like, I don't look cool enough to be in VR. This isn't happening. Like, I'm not rich and I'm not cool enough. So, like, I guess I'm done.
Stupid pandemic.
I know. I was like, why is this happening?
Right.
So with that came So Close So Far. And I wrote what I thought was going to be like a farewell song. Like, I thought it was like my swan song. And it was really weird and experimental and ambient. And
were you conscious of that as you were writing it? Or was that more of a sentiment you had after you were done
writing
it?
No, I was like, this is my last song.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. Like,
that
it
had to be a weird headspace to set out on a creative journey.
Oh, yeah. I was in a headspace. the pandemic just really was like, squish. Like, let's just make sure you stay down there.
Oh.
Yeah.
So when you get that song done, where do you go from there?
It was a process to get that song done because it went through different waves, too. I really didn't know what I wanted. To be completely fair, I had no idea when I was hearing it. I was recording with a buddy of mine, Dylan Carney in St. Pete. And when we did it, like I said, it was very experimental. It was ambient. It didn't sound like anything I had ever put out. And I was like, ooh, I'm into this. No one will ever know it's me. Ha ha ha. You know, and I kind of enjoyed that. And then I was like, oh, I'm getting kind of sad. Like, maybe this isn't how I want to say goodbye. So then I started making it into a heavy, grungy rock song. And then I was like, wait, I want to be in a grunge band. And all these lights went off in my head. And I was like, oh, I'm going to be in a grunge band. And then I started getting these girls together and I was starting an all-girl punk kind of grungy band that ended up kind of falling apart as it came together. And you know how that happens. Like, I was like gung-ho on this project.
I was gonna say, it looks really good on paper.
It did. Yeah. It looked great on paper. All of them were super talented, but life happened,
right?
You know, and it just went boop, boop, boop. And I had this song recorded with drums, guitar, vocals, lots of weird things that I just sort of like threw onto it. And then I messaged Josh, who I hadn't spoken to in a while because like life happened. And we both went through different things during the pandemic. And I was like, hey, do you want to like lay bass on this? I don't really know what I want to do with my band, but like maybe you can do this. And he did.
So you've been universally a good sounding board and a hell of a pinch hitter.
You know, I do what I can. But yeah, you know, we put that tune together, had a lot of fun with it. Wrote a line, put a whole synthesizer part on it, which was a first for your music, and it was my first time recording any. So
nice.
We had a lot of fun with it, and I think it was, sort of a launching off point into this current era of the Lisa Silvermore Band.
Yeah.
So when you had done the recording for that song, who were the people that recorded it with you, the guitar and drums, are they still with you now, or this was just to get that song done?
It was a kitchen sink of just like hodgepodge, throwing things together.
Okay.
I had my friend Ashley, who was part of the like the girl band that I was trying to put together. Her and I were jamming one day, and I was like, do you want to go to St. Pete and record? I do this to my friends. God, why am I like this? Okay, I just had a realization that I
was going
to
say, we're digging this one up.
I just throw things on people, and they're like, okay.
Short notice, but I need you to record for me now.
And then for some reason, people are
you're
like,
you're dressed, right?
Yeah, and then they're like, okay. So I guess I attract this kind of personality too. But yeah, I like looked at her, and I'm like, do you want to go to St. Pete and record these drums? And she was like, sure. She recorded the drums. I laid down a scratch take. Next thing I knew, I was recording the guitar and the vocals, and we had a song, and I didn't know what to do. I was starting to play bass for it, and I was like, no. Why would I play bass for this when I know there's a really, really great bass player that I could call? And that's when my fear was that, like, this is weird and not Lisa Silvermore Band, that if I pull Josh on this, are people going to start like speculating like, oh, wait, you can only be folk. You can only be acoustic. You can only be this. And
right.
So I was adding maybe my own voices that weren't really there. So by reaching out to Josh, again, putting myself into an uncomfortable situation and being like, all right, dude, like I'm pulling you in and hoping for the best that people like this song. And I didn't even say that it was Lisa Silvermore Band. I just said Lisa Silvermore because I was like, I have no idea. No idea what's going to happen.
And what were you thinking at this point? We're just going to record this one as a one-off and I'm just going to do my thing I always do?
You know, I was thinking we record it. And then honestly, my big thing, because at the time, right, you were kind of hung up on going electric, right? To like borrow from what you said right? It literally was the going electric question. You're like, if I get the electric guitar, everything's different. It's not really my music anymore. And I think my perspective the whole time was like, come on. Like, it's not, people aren't sitting there looking at it the same way you are.
Right.
With the microscope. And I think that, you know, even to get back to something you mentioned earlier, like trying to write stuff that's interesting. I think one thing that's difficult as a musician that you have to try and unplug from is like imagining that your own focus is the audience's focus. Right. And imagining that everyone's thinking about the things that you're thinking about. Right. Because, you know, depending on who they are, what expectations they're coming with, it's like the music just has to be good. Right. You just have to have solid tunes and it helps if it's fun. Right.
Yeah.
And like I knew fully that you could make a jump to doing an electric thing and it wouldn't be a big deal. And people would even really like it.
Yeah.
But you kind of had to accept it first. Right.
That's like, so true.
That was the big thing.
Yeah. And I had to accept that things were going to just change once I went electric, too. Like, that my songwriting was going to change. Everything was going to be totally different.
What were some of the things that changed?
I think, well, because I write my songs with acoustic guitar. I sit down with my acoustic to write. I don't sit with my electric guitar to write. And I still kind of do that to this day. Like, I go back and forth now. But so I knew that was going to be a change. Like, oh, here I am playing with my acoustic, but it's going to sound completely different. Like, when I'm pulling this to my guitar and I'm now putting these pedals to it. And
right.
Like, there's just so many different layers now. And I think I was kind of going down the rabbit hole when So Close So Far came out. And I hit every pedal, I think. I was like, pedal, 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 pedal. Let's see what fun I can do.
Well, you got to hit them all before you find out which one or two you want to use.
And it worked. Now I have my favorite one so far.
There you go. Well, the pedal quest is a dangerous wormhole,
it
as
really
I'm sure
is.
You know.
Mm-hmm.
So after that song comes out and you're kind of getting on the other side of the pandemic, where does stuff start to settle out for you where you start to gain ground and now build up what is the Lisa Silvermore Band again, where you're not trying to be ambiguous about it. Now you're starting to put it Humpty Dumpty back together again for real.
Yeah. I think that's a really good question. I think it was a slow process for me. It was like me putting some like building blocks together because I was trying to figure out what it is that I wanted to sound like, what it is I was trying to get across. And I wanted to like just burn the image of me with like the acoustic guitar so badly. Like I think I was going through like a weird metamorphosis where I was just like, I don't ever want to be that girl ever again, you know? And so when people would hire me for gigs, they were like, oh, so like you're going to come play? And I was like, only if it's electric. And they're like, oh, you don't even have an electric song out yet. And I'm like, uh-huh. Yeah,
that's all right. They're all out in my head.
They are.
Get
exactly.
Ready.
And Josh was another part of this where you had me play for your album release.
Yeah.
And I wasn't really playing shows because I was trying to, not knowing what the heck I was doing or where I wanted to go with music or how I wanted to sound. I wasn't playing. I was not playing any live shows. While I was doing this like recording of So Close So Far, trying to figure out who I am, what my music sounded like, it was this like weird thing. I was like keeping in the corner away from everyone. And then Josh was like, hey, do you want to open up for Physical Plant solo? And I'm like, I remember just staring at my phone like, do I? I mean, I love Physical Plant. Of course I want to. The answer is yes, but like I'm terrified because what are expectations? You know? I had to get over that hurdle.
What were your expectations for yourself at that point?
I think I wanted like all this new stuff out. And I was holding myself back. Like, if I don't have new stuff, then I'm not going to perform.
Ah.
And that's kind of silly. Like, I don't need to do that. But at the time, I felt that, you know? And that was like me wanting this past Lisa to be done with. And so when I went and played for their album release, I did half and half. I even invited him and Dave to come up because Dave Cornicelli played drums for me for a while. And I had them both come up and we played two songs that we would play together. But then I also played at least two or three of my new songs that no one had heard yet. So that was like I felt like that was like this beautiful balancing moment that was happening.
That was kind of a way you could barter with yourself.
Exactly. Like I was like, it was like old Lisa and new Lisa were shaking hands right then.
Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah.
So from there, that's when you start hitting the ground and developing Lisa Silvermoor Band again.
Yeah. I felt like I had Josh's blessings after that. Like Josh was like, you may enter back into the music scene now. No, Josh, it's the wizard in you. Just accept.
Yeah. Yeah. We're sticking with this. Drawbridge, like, moat, we're going with all of it.
I think the really clear dark demarcation we should talk about too is Dylan Plaster coming into the group, right?
Yes.
Our fantastic drummer that we have now.
Yes.
Because that was August, I want to say, of 23, that album release show,
yes,
right? And that was the first time I had heard at least three of those tunes, and I know it was your first time back on stage in a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And then it was December. No, wait, it would have been 22.
It would have been 22.
It would have been
22. Oh gosh, time, yeah. Year is so weird.
So it was December 22. That's when we started playing with Dylan, and for me that was like the, oh okay, Lisa's back at it sort of moment, because it's like we're in the room with a drummer. We're on the schedule, and now we've got rock drums with these rock tunes, and there's an electric guitar here, and look, it's all real. It's not scary.
Yeah, yeah. It was a big hurdle for me, and I don't know why it was, but I think it was, you know, when you're in a small town, you know, I think you get this, like, fear that people will only accept certain things, but that's so not it. People in a small town are actually just really excited that you're going out and doing something that they can go support.
True.
They're like, oh my gosh, you're gonna make art? Yeah, tell me where you're going so I can go there.
Well, that's very interesting. And I recently had a conversation with a woman named Ashley Yashevich. She runs a podcast called The Endurance Diaries. And she talks a lot about, you know, the getting out there and doing it like that. Was there a time, I don't know how to couch this, was there a time when you were having crisis of faith at that moment or in those early onsets when Josh gives you the blessing, lowers the drawbridge, or were you still having some second thoughts of yourself? Because it seems to be, I guess I'm trying to drive at the point where you start to have less of a consciousness of what other people might be thinking about you.
Yeah, I think... The show where I opened up, I think that was like a big thing for me, being that that was exactly it. Like I went out there and I played half my old songs to kind of like honor what was going on with me and like where I was heading. But then these new songs, it felt so good to perform them, especially Rip Off the Mask, which is like probably one of my favorite, one of my songs. And it like does something to me. It like takes a hold of me. Like I'm like, and
love
that
it.
Song, when I even was solo, like I like lit up. And when I got done playing that show that night, I had this like total change in me that was like, yep, we have to get back to this. Like something just like woke up inside me like, no more trying to tell yourself you're not a musician. Like you got to get back.
So what was that like? Was that like a sense of having to sell yourself a new self-assuredness, or was this regaining confidence you used to have or you used to identify with?
I feel like a little bit of both, like kind of like Luke Skywalker when he didn't want to be a Jedi anymore, when he was like, I'm not a Jedi. And then you're like, you're a Jedi.
Yeah.
You know, like
you can't even exile yourself.
Yeah, I felt like it was that. Like I had one of my close friends and his band member, Kagan, he would come to my house, like knock on my door and basically was like, dude, pull out your guitar. Let's jam. Come on.
Love that.
Let's play music. And I was like, no. Like I was just such a little like, I don't know. I was in a weird place.
Well, I was going to say I think it's not that uncommon for people who have a creative arc like that to get protectionist at one point.
Yeah. I think I didn't even like it when someone like was like, oh yeah, Lisa's a rock star. Like, cause that would get thrown at me a lot. And I'd be like, no, I'm not.
Yeah.
That person's gone, you know.
Exactly.
I'm blonde now. I don't even dye my hair weird colors.
Yeah. I'm a totally different person. Yeah. Hair's not even the same color. Yeah.
I'm not even pink. Who am I? So I think that's what, like, that really did start to change. And I did start to get that confidence with the newer tunes.
Yeah. And that nothing sounds better in a rock song than some self-assuredness.
Yeah. That's
and some
right.
confidence.
It's so true.
So once you start to get going, what's the, you, are you, I guess this is a sidebar question, and we'll try to get you home kind of on this one or in this area. Nowadays, people are kind of, and I hate to be like nowadays, but you're sort of incentivized to release single after single after single and do this single game. You're clearly able to write records and then put a band together and play them either right with the band or right by yourself. How do you navigate how you want to present your art? Have you written an album? Are you in a single cycle? What do you see as the most advantageous way to get your stuff out there?
Yeah, that stuff keeps me up at night.
Same.
I won't lie. I think about that probably a little too often. So we did the single So Close So Far, and then we did our single that we just released, Burned, in November. And we are currently recording another single. I mean, the truth is, I would love to get us in a studio and record a whole, like, full-length album again. But time, money, energy, it's a lot. And in finding those resources right now, I feel like it's just not the same as it used to be. And, you know, I want to support my friends. My friends record my albums, but I pay them. You know,
yeah,
it's not
course.
Like they're doing it for free. So I want to make sure that I'm paying everyone correctly and properly, and I'm putting in the same time of energy with my band as I am making this album. So, yeah, do I wish I was 23, 4 days in a studio? Of course. I want that all the time. But, you know, I'm 32 and life's a little different.
Well, is writing a full-length record your preference?
I would love that. Yeah, I mean, like, I have at least, like, 12 songs now, you know? And we play the full set, but... And that's what's tough, right? It's like... We play this set of all new songs, and then people afterwards are like, where can I hear this? And I'm like, the next show.
Yeah.
Or a live video, because luckily we do have, you know, a great team of people who record us, Kayla, Tori, and Jason at Oscura. I mean, Oscura is so great. They have created this amazing team that,
yes.
you know, flourishes there. And we, you know, we've been able to record videos there with live audio that Matthew records there. So, like, we're so lucky to have Oscura. Like,
yeah, we all are. Huge shout out to them.
God, sure. Huge shout out to them. I love them so much.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We'll do all the family jams there as long as they're up and running.
Yeah, no, I will do anything in my power to make sure that I don't. Not that I have a lot of power, but like I would do anything to keep them going.
It's all about the mutual support. So, Josh, maybe you can touch on this for me right quick, because I know you have some other projects you work in as well. How do you view the avenue of getting your art out now?
Yeah, it's tough. I don't like engaging with it all that much, to be honest with you. Right.
Right.
Because you know. I do feel like we're in a cycle where the album form has been degraded a ton, and you know it's tough. It's like in the tech sense and in the ease of, you know, just recording and distribution, easier than it's ever been. Getting anybody, you know, on a broader level outside of your friend group to care about what you're recording is, you know, maybe as tough, if not tougher, than it's ever been.
Right.
That's
what a weird
so
juxtaposition
true.
There.
Right. You know, and I think. The most dangerous thing for all musicians is Instagram, and especially watching tips from people, right? And like what you should be doing, and write your tune this way. And at the, you know, 1 minute and 17 second mark, you need to make sure to put this in there because that way, you know, and that whole mode of looking at songwriting sort of drives me nuts. My perspective on it, which I will stick to for better or worse, is make what you want to make, make something that you like, and just put it out there, because you can only spend so much time doing this stuff. And you only get so many shots, like, even in your life, right, to engage with creative projects. And
good point.
They're most likely all going to fail anyway. So fail making something you like, right?
Yeah, that's a very important, that's a very powerful point. I'm glad you made it. I believe it was Beethoven, maybe it was Bach, wrote 500 pieces and only 5 of them are considered masterworks.
Sure. Right.
Yeah.
So I think we lose sight of that now. Maybe Instagram is a culprit for that, in that everybody looks like everything we do is a masterwork.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like, it's okay to be messy, and it's okay to, like, you know, some songs aren't going to be as popular or get as many numbers as you thought, but it's like, you got to keep going. Right. If you're enjoying it and you like it, then keep making it, you know?
Right, that's very powerful. So let me ask you this. I want to ask you one little bit loaded one, and then we can ask an easy one to get you out of here. The person we had in here before you was a painter. He's had a prolific career as an artist. He paints all kinds of things. We've been blessed to speak to many creative people, and this is a question that I've recently begun asking people because I think it's something that plagues all creatives. How do you know or how do you sense when your song that you're writing is done? We're not writing any more parts, or in the studio, we're not laying down another vocal. How do you find satisfaction in your creative works when and you can say, this is done, and I move on now?
This is going to sound so cheesy and cliche, but it just feels right. Like, you just know. Like, I think I'm an overthinker, like a lot of probably artists are.
Right.
And I will stress and I will overthink and I'll be like, no, oh, I gotta retake this vocal take, or the drums are, maybe we need to work on that. And I'll get stuck on a loop of things that I need to work on. Like, it's like this forever, like, going list in my head. And then one day you're listening to it and then you just go, that's it. Like, I know it sounds so simple, but it's like a core feeling. Like, you feel it in, like, your gut. And it just, like, it's like alignment. Like, everything just goes boop, and you know you're done. And you kind of question that for a moment, too. You're like, wait, is it?
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. It is, you know.
That voice got to tell you a couple times. No, yeah. It's done. Stop. Quit thinking.
That's what happened with our most recent single, because it did take some time. We really... We, meaning me and my thousands of voices in my head telling me I want this, 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 and that. But we were going through different phases with Burned because I really wanted this to be such a solid rock tune, where So Close So Far was kind of grungy and maybe a little psychedelic and experimental. I was like, I want this to be a rock tune. Boop.
No questions asked.
Yeah. Like, when you listen to it, you're like, ah, a rock song. And so because of that, you know, you thought that was going to be simple, but then I was like, no way, I actually kind of want my guitar to sound like this and the bass to sound like that. I mean, we tried like 3 or 4 different basses to get the tone correct.
Yeah.
Because
you had a very clear vision of what you wanted.
Yeah, I had a super clear vision, and the track is so bass heavy. It's really driven by Josh's bass line. So when you have a song start with a bass, like it literally starts on his bass, you kind of have to go, I need this bass to sound exactly like this. And I was probably a little too fixated on it, but it worked.
Yeah.
And Kagan, who produced it, who luckily is both of our like best friends, because I don't think he'd probably deal with it if he wasn't. he totally got it. He was like, I understand you want this bass to sound this way. And then the drums, you know, Dylan has a certain idea with their drums. And then we sat down with them to make sure that the drums sounded like them, but still like me. Like, we all had this like idea, and then eventually Kagan and I were sitting down listening to all of it, and we were just like, whoa, wait, is this it? This is it. We're done. We're gonna walk away. And we did. We like walked away from the computer. We're like, we're gonna go to bed and then we're gonna talk about it tomorrow. And then yeah, we pulled it up the next day and we were like,
I think it's still good.
We didn't just dream it. Like, it's exactly how we wanted it to sound.
That's awesome. Because there are times when you can have the opposite happen.
Yeah. And then you're like, cool, okay, this is going to take another month.
Yeah. When you wake up the next day, it's like, oh, dude, we spent all our time tracking that. No.
Yep, back to the drawing board.
Yeah. So, Josh, I'm going to throw this one to you, too. How do you know, or how do you identify with your sense of, my piece is done now, this is, I can be satisfied and move on?
So, like... The way I think of it, it's like if you ever go for a really long run, right, and you get really thirsty, right, you take that first big sip of water, and then it's like, ah, right, I needed that. And then you probably drink a whole glass of water after that, right, where you know you need to be hydrated. But there comes a certain point where you don't need to drink any more water, right? Like, in that moment, you're hydrated enough, you're refreshed enough, you're still tired from your run or whatever, but it's like, okay, I'm good for now. And like, that's kind of the way I look at it with recording or writing or anything like that. If you really feel the need to keep adding to it or subtracting from it,
or not let it out into the world.
Yeah, then okay, you need to keep doing it. But when the time comes where it doesn't really stimulate you to work on it anymore, and instead it feels like, oh, well, I'm doing this because I think I should be doing it. Mm-hmm. I think I should add this part. I think I should do that. That's a point at which creatively you might be done and you're moving into a more technical phase. And like making the distinction between what the creative work and the technical work is a whole other question, especially with production and mastering and all that stuff. But, you know, that's where I step out.
I was going to say, especially since a lot of people now wear many hats.
Yeah.
You know, well, it's the sign of the times.
It is.
If we can't record the song we wrote and do all of it, then what are we even doing?
Yeah, it's so true.
Okay, well, let's get you out of here on a fun one then. No tangled web. So let's just say the next thing you get to release is going to be a full album, okay? And I ask this question not to find out what your favorite bands are, but what to find out what you see as the most symbiotic things you would put your work alongside. So you've got a fantasy album release party. Who are you picking to play with you? I don't care, live or dead. Any,
so
if what helps,
this
what
is gonna be a
what
festival?
What is the most in your eyes the most complimentary thing you would add to the Lisa Silvermore Band album release extravaganza?
All right, you have to pick a band. I have to pick a band.
Okay. And you're waiting for me to go first.
And you got to say it on three. No, I'm just kidding.
It compliments or like it like that it makes
you would
sense.
Pick. That you would pick. Wouldn't even have to make sense. Oh, I had one person chose Devin Townsend and Metallica, and they were two artists that are nothing like the thing. So it's just more, like I said, I don't ask these questions to necessarily find out what your favorite band is, but to see where your brain is at with how the room ties together.
Man, that's so hard. Oh, I have so many artists that I want to pick.
Well, there's no limit on mine. You can say two or three.
I was going to say, can I get both Joan Jett and Chapel Roan?
Yes. But Joan Jett Ryder is like a pound of weed up front, so you're going to have that.
I just want to hang out with both of them. If they just happen to want to play music with me, that's cool too.
Those are good answers.
Yeah.
Joan Jett is such a classic, and Chapel Roan, she's redefining.
Literally. She inspires me all the time. Like, both of them are such inspirations and powerhouses. But then, like, I also think of Wolf Alice. Like, I love the singer of that, too. So, yeah, there's a lot of people that I would pull from. I did get to play with Alex Johnson, and that was one of my big-time inspirations that I grew up listening to.
Awesome.
And opening up for her was, like, poof, mind-blowing.
Love that.
Yeah. Who would you put?
I've been listening to this band called Magdalena Bay recently. They're from California.
Love that name.
Yeah.
They're like a, it's dancey, sort of proggy, psychedelic pop, but it's very poppy and very weird. The bass player's just ripping.
That's cool.
So
that's awesome.
I mean, that's what I would choose.
Yeah. And then I'd throw some local bands in there too, because why not?
Well, of course.
Throw the Tilt on there.
Oh, yeah. Shout out to Tilt.
Gabe Hernandez. Now I'm going down the rabbit hole.
I was gonna say it's festival time.
That would be
now
festival.
You're moving to snub territory.
Yeah, no, I want
not get mentioned.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, right. But now I'm like, I want everyone.
You got your dream show. Who is absolutely not playing? No, I'm just kidding.
Oh man.
Well, Lisa, Josh, I can't thank you guys for coming down enough. I'm so grateful
thank
that we finally
you.
Got to have you
yes,
here.
Yes, this was so much fun. Thank you for having us.
Oh, man. And you guys are always welcome. So when the singles come out, when the album comes out, when the tour's ready, whatever it is, you guys are K the fam. You always got a home here. So Lisa, Josh, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thanks, Eric.
Yeah, thank you so much.